Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Joe Mullinax is the site manager for Grizzly Bear Blues. He, of course, is the host of the Grizzly Bear Blues live podcast. Make sure you check that out on Blog Talk Radio. Also, you can find the archives of each episode available on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts can be found. Go follow Joe on Twitter, at Joe Mullinax. Joe, happy Friday to you, my man.
Same to you guys. My Friday is probably a little bit happier than your guys' Friday. I had the rare snow day with no snow.
Okay, so we have the cold, of course, my definition of cold and your definition of cold are probably vastly different. If it's below like 50, your boy's miserable. But we're in that like 40s and it's kind of raining. It's just miserable.
It's 38 here, and we were supposed to get a little bit of snow last night, and the county that I work for up here in Northern Virginia canceled school. Very few other counties did. They did a delay to see what the weather would be like. My county, though, came through in the clutch and canceled school, and your boy had a snow day without any snow. So I was able to get some pickup basketball in and get some work done around the house. I didn't have to worry about travel. The daycare was still open, so I took my daughter to daycare. It has been a good day for Joe.
We're going to get into Grizzlies topics, but I want to ask you this. For those that don't know, of course, Joe's also a high school football coach, and I wanted to ask you this. In terms of running backs at the NFL level, so we saw Daryl Henderson today. He unofficially ran the 4.36. Now, according to NFL.com, he ran, I think, the eighth fastest 40 time. That's a 4.5, but most consensus agreement is he's not an every down back in the NFL. But how would you best use a guy like Daryl Henderson? Maybe he doesn't have the greatest vision, but he's clearly a home run threat. And what would be a spot for you that you think he makes sense at?
I think an Alvin Kamara light makes sense for him. You know, having watched him play at the University of Memphis and the athleticism he has, the explosiveness, I think that you get him out on the perimeter. You throw screens for him, some tunnel screens, some quick flare outs. You get him in space. I don't know that you try to put him into a system where you try to teach him how to run power. You know what I mean? Like
The
basic pro-style offense that a lot of these places, like Washington, D.C. is probably not the right place for Daryl Henderson. The Redskins wouldn't be a good spot for him. The Chiefs, you know, the Saints, the Rams, a place like that where there's a little bit more offensive innovation, even the Arizona Cardinals. Cliff Kingsbury is probably going to do some different stuff. I think that if you put him in spots on the perimeter where he's able to go out in space with lead blockers, you get him in positions to use that speed and to be able to get into that open lane of grass where he's able to hit that second and third gear. That's how I would use him. Tosses, you know, again, kind of like what the Saints do with Alvin Kamara, but obviously not quite as good as Kamara. That doesn't mean that he doesn't have a place in the NFL. I think he showed today he has at least the burst and initial ability to maintain that speed that he can play in the NFL. So I would try to get him out in space and let him work out there.
All right, last NFL question. Are you hoping your Redskins take a quarterback?
Not if they have to trade up for him. Kyler Murray is explosive, and I think he's fun. I would like to watch him play for the Redskins because it's kind of like the Grizzlies right now, except a lot worse. You know, there's not really much to be excited about with the Redskins. But he would definitely bring energy and excitement, but I don't think he's worth trading up for. The Redskins have too many holes in so many different places to give up draft picks to trade for somebody. So if they like, you know, I think Daniel Jones is one from Duke, and the kid from Missouri, Locke, I'm not a big guy or a big fan of his, but if they fall in love with somebody at 15, I mean, they have the worst quarterback situation in the NFL where it's very likely that the guy that they pay $20 million a year is not going to be able to play because of his broken leg and Alex Smith, and then Colt McCoy is Colt McCoy. Oh, and he's also coming off of a broken leg. So it's an unfortunate situation for them. They probably have to address it in the draft unless they want to try to pay somebody like, he was the quarterback for the Broncos this year.
Case Keenum. Case Keenum's the worst. You can relate with this. he's the worst quarterback to have because as a coach, he does everything you want him to. He throws on time. He does he makes all the right reads. Like he does everything about the position well, except he just has no talent.
And all of that is fair. I'm not disagreeing with a single thing you just said, but again, just rehashing, the Redskins quarterback situation is awful.
Like, oh, yes.
That literally might be the best case scenario for them, is to have Case Keenum, you know, maybe a Will Greer, who they draft in the second or third round from West Virginia, and Colt McCoy, and they throw the ball out on the practice field and say, go get it, boys. That might be the Washington Redskins quarterback competition of 2019. So you're exactly right. It's not a positive situation for them by any stretch.
Joe Monex joining us here of Grizzly Bear Blues. Of course, check out his podcast, The Grizzly Bear Blues Live. All right, on to the Grizzlies. I presume you're already on to the draft, right?
Kinda. I mean, I'm still team play to convey. I know that's looking less and less likely every day, but that still should be, until it is mathematically impossible, what they're trying to pursue, because that just makes more sense in the long run. You're getting off of the obligation. You're able to hit that full reset button. To me, knowing this front office, at least after watching this organization for the past 7 or 8 years, you see them, it gives them the opening that they need to be able to say, okay, reset button, boom. And then I think that once it's cleared, you can go and just completely be awful and be able to start this long, slow rebuild process, because that's what it's going to have to be. I'm familiar with the top three or four guys. I watch a lot of ACC basketball, being in Virginia and being a Virginia fan myself. Obviously, I'm familiar with the Dukies and obviously DeAndre Hunter and a couple of the other guys that play in the ACC. But I have not begun my my full draft dig. I have not.
Do you think it's this is where I'm torn, because you look at where they are. If you go to Tankathon, if we're in the reverse standings, they're only 2.5 behind Atlanta. Like, I'm not that opposed to thinking that that's not impossible, because they're still 2 games trailing in the reverse standings of Washington. They're 3 games behind New Orleans. And then, I mean, really, you know, you have, to me, the worst spot to be in is 7. Because if you're in the 7th spot, like, odds-wise, that is the worst-case scenario. Because if you finish 7th, your most likely spot to wind up in the lottery is at the 8th pick. You have a 34% chance. That is that's the highest odds of anything. You wind up at the 8th with the 8th pick, which is, I think we can all agree, the worst spot. And then you've only got roughly a 14% chance of falling to 9 or 10, getting to where you can convey. And then if you look at it in terms of 8, at least if you finish up in 8th, you have, you know, roughly a 40% chance of getting to the point where you want to convey. Obviously, the spot to be in is 9, but do you think it is reasonable for them to get to the 9 spot?
I think it's almost, to me, everybody who's clamoring for the tank, and you just mentioned the reverse rankings, there's no way they're catching the top 3 or 4 teams.
No,
they're just not
completely agree.
There. It's impossible. So if your best opportunity is 5th, and currently you're in 6th, to me, you again, until it is mathematically impossible, which the way that they've played, I could be on the show in a few weeks talking to you guys and saying, okay, now it's time to just, you know, shut it down. Let's go home. Let's see if we can get the 5th and be done with it. That's certainly possible. I'm not trying to say that this team's all of a sudden going to reel off 10 wins and the convey will be easy. It's going to probably go up right to the last game against the Golden State Warriors, when Golden State's resting everybody and you're a game out of that spot that you just talked about, to try to get to the best place to convey. It's going to be like Jackie Moon in semi-pro. I said that earlier this week, the race for 4th place, you know, with Will Ferrell in semi-pro. I think it could definitely be like that, the Memphis Grizzlies Mega Bowl. We're looking at a situation where, again, you want to clear the obligation because it allows for you to officially hit the reset button on what is going to be a long and arduous rebuild. I wrote about that this week when it comes to Jaren Jackson Jr. You are going to be trudging for a long time, and you want to do your very best to put Jaren in a position to where at least all the crap he's about to endure is worth something. All the adversity that he's going to be the cornerstone through, more likely than not, you have to make it for something. And I really struggle with going into this saying you want to have the 5th best lottery odds so that you can pick Jarrett Culver. You know, I just struggle with that. Again, I'm no disrespect to Jarrett Culver, I'm not super familiar with his game yet, but I've heard plenty of people whose jobs it is to be knee-deep in the draft by this stage of the game, and they say Jarrett Culver this year might be the fourth overall pick. If he were in the 2020 draft, he might be the 10th or 11th pick. What are we talking about? You know what I mean? So to me, the goal should be to, until it is mathematically impossible, because obviously there will be percentage, extremely unlikely that you'll be able to convey this pick, you fight and scratch and claw to do it so that you can have that obligation gone so that in the future, if you're a bad basketball team, at least you benefit from it through the lottery odds. And right now, the more that you are bad this year, say you are the fifth team and you move up to four, and you go, okay, congratulations, you got Cam Reddish. Well, in 2020, the pick is less protected. So now what do? Do you hold on to Jonas Valanciunas if he opts in? Do you keep Mike Conley around to help mentor Cam and Jaren Jackson Jr.? You're just kicking the can down the road. I want to rip the Band-Aid off the bullet wound. I want to move on, and the best way to do that is to convey the pick this year. Because, again, it allows a front office that needs all the help it can get to find these openings. It gives them that clean chance to make a break, and it also makes it so that in the future, when you are bad, and they're going to be bad, you have the chance to take advantage of it and not have to worry about someone else breathing down your neck, wanting to see what the scores are of your games.
Joe Mullinax of Grizzly Bear Blues is joining us on the program. Of course, it is the teen site for SB Nation covering the Memphis Grizzlies. Should we be talking more about how, like, in terms of front office moves, and in the last 5-6 years, this front office doesn't exactly have a ton of great resume lines, but I feel like one of the underrated things that we overlook consistently is the fact that they made this trade with Boston and how essentially the protections for this pick were so short-sighted. Like, don't you feel like that should be something we should be talking about more?
Some people did. Credit to folks like Matt Hardwicka, who was a writer for us at the time. He has a great Patreon page now that people should subscribe to if they don't already do so. Matt Hardwicka hated that trade. That kind of led them to this place when it went down with Jeff Green and the Celtics. And I can't have that same stance because I supported it. You know, I was very much that all-in, Jeff Green's the answer. I think I wrote a godforsaken article with that exact title. One of my biggest flubs is the belief in Jeff Green. And when you look back on it in hindsight, it's certainly easy to say everything you just said. You're not wrong at all. But when you're trying to maximize that era, which is what they were trying to do, and you truly felt that Jeff Green might be that guy, and again, credit to Hardwicka, and I think some others were also in the boat of saying this isn't going to work, and they were right. But that was the option that they saw in front of them in terms of trying to get that wing that can put that group of guys over the edge. And because of how special it was, because of the unique situation in Memphis where you're trying to establish a fan base, you know what you have is special. They kind of lucked in to this organic relationship between the city and the team with the personalities that were Tony Allen, Zach Randolph. It's hard for me to critique them. In hindsight, and again, the folks that said it all along can obviously crush them for it. It's easy to say, yes, that was an awful trade, and you're exactly right. The protections are tough. It sets you up in the weird position where you are trying to be the very best you can be so you don't have a first-round pick. That it opened you up for that possibility. And in terms of the front office, if you're looking at it from when that trade went down several years later, you know, it probably could have been easy to say, okay, Marc Gasol is going to be 34. Mike Conley is going to be over 30. They're probably not going to be that good, or at least not as good as they are right now. This is going to hurt later. So I do believe that any critique of that move is warranted. I'm just not going to do it because I was very much in the mindset that they're trying to maximize this group of guys. It didn't work out, but at least they swung for the fences. So I get the criticism, and I do think, as you said, there's plenty that they've done that can be criticized. And I think for lots of folks, that's one of the biggest ones, and that's one of the reasons we're in the spot we are right now. Maybe I'm unique. I'm not going to crush them because I saw value in it at the time, and I understood what they were trying to do, and I appreciated the effort, but it just didn't work out. Similar thought process with the Chandler Parsons signing. They were swinging for the fences. There was another guy that could potentially be that piece that could help them transition to a next era of basketball for the Grizzlies. It just didn't work out. Parsons is probably more forgivable. That might be a good article or conversation idea. Which one is worse, the Green trade or the Parsons signing? That's actually a really good I'm going to have to sit down and write that. But anyway, the concept is that they're trying. They're taking a swing. They're trying to maximize what this team could have been with a group of guys that were beloved in the city and key parts of the organization. It just didn't work out. And when you swing for the fence and you strike out, there's consequences for that. And the Grizzlies are experiencing that right now.
In terms of teams that are sitting right in front of them, the Grizzlies will have three games with the Mavs. The first one, of course, tomorrow night, 7:30. Game you can hear on 92.9 FM ESPN against the Mavs. And then they will go to Oklahoma City on Sunday night. But in terms of if they're going to get to this point where you convey, I mean, realistically, you got to at least win two out of three against the Mavs, right?
Absolutely. Hopefully you sweep them. I mean, they don't have Kristaps Porzingis. They obviously made the move to get him, and they lost some depth in that process. Luka Doncic is, you know, the rookie of the year. I see people arguing for Trae Young and stuff like that. Just stop it. I mean, Trae has really had a good second half of the season, but Luka has been just remarkable for much of the year. You got to try to slow him down, which is going to be a challenge. Putting Avery Bradley on him is probably what they'll do, and I don't know how that'll end for the Grizzlies. But you have to pick off these teams that are at least comparable to you, and you have to find ways to win games against the teams that aren't as invested in winning as you. The Mavericks are a team that don't have a ton of incentive to be all that good. The Grizzlies have a lot of incentive. There has to be a focus in those contests. And again, it's a weird thing. I don't envy Bickerstaff in this way, to go into your locker room and say, all right, guys, let's beat this team that may be less interested than us because we want to send away an asset now. Yeah, like, what's the pregame speech? You know, aside from, you know, the basic professionalism that should come along with being an NBA player. It really is going to be a situation where they have to start reeling off some wins, as it sounds basic to say, but they have to get into a rhythm. They have to get into a situation where they have some momentum going, a climate and a culture of energy and competition. They're getting there. It's getting better, and you can see that in the play of Joakim Noah. Obviously, Valanciunas has done some good things. The Lakers game is a great example of that, but they have to be able to maintain that, because if you're going to have a good Lakers game, and then for every Lakers game, there's a couple of games like the Bulls, that's not how you convey the pick. That's how you stay exactly where you are at six, and you more likely than not are at seven or eight, like you mentioned earlier, and you're holding onto that pick, taking a DeAndre Hunter, who I like DeAndre Hunter from UVA, but I don't think he's, again, he's a guy that would be a 12th or 13th overall guy in a better draft. So there's not a ton of value there. The value is still in trying to send that pick out. So whether it's the Mavericks, obviously the Thunder are going to be a challenge. They have to find ways to pick off the teams that are comparable to them, and the Mavericks are a good example of that. So they have to at least win two of the next three against Dallas, and I would argue that they need to win, try to sweep. You know, if they don't sweep those games, then it makes them more likely to have to pick off the Warriors or the Thunder when they line up with them, and that's obviously far less likely.
And then in terms of getting to the nine, if I said the Grizzlies will have to win X amount of games to get to the nine, how many do you think they're going to have to win, obviously with the 1-3 start after the All-Star break?
How many do they have left? 19 now?
I believe that is 20? Correct.
19? Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 left.
19. Got it right the first time. I'll probably put it at 9.
I think that's fair.
I think they'll have to try to find 9 wins of those 19 games, try to be a 500 team. Because, again, Washington doesn't have a ton of incentive to be good. You have a couple of, and you have a game coming up with Washington in the next couple of weeks. You're looking at opportunities to gain ground, quote-unquote, on these other lottery teams. It's going to be there if they're able to take it. They just have to find their footing. They have to figure out what their rotation is going to be on a night-in, night-out basis. Are they going to invest in Bruno Caboclo? Are they going to let C.J. Miles get burned? You know, Javon Carter's kind of falling off the face of the earth. What's going on with him? They need to get to a steady rotation where there's some consistency for these guys so they can make chemistry with one another, whether it's the starting lineup, a bench unit, whatever that's going to be, especially with all the change that's occurred. It's hard for them to get into the rhythm of, okay, this is how CJ likes the ball in the pocket before he shoots. This is where Joakim Noah lines up on the elbow if I want to set him an off-ball screen or whatever it might be. You know, in terms of movement, scheme, playing with one another, you have to find that as fast as possible because they don't have the benefit of multiple practices. They have no training camp to establish a culture or a climate to which they can say, I know how this guy wants to play at his best. If they don't have that, they have to do their very best to at least give them some semblance of consistency where they have control of it. And the rotation's an example of that. The starting lineup's an example of that. I hope that J.B. Bickerstaff and his staff continues to try to settle on who's going to help them get to that end goal of conveying the pick. And that's the best hope that they have, is trying to develop consistency where they have control over it.
Joe, enjoy the rest of your surprise three-day weekend, my man.
I appreciate it. Thank you, fellas.
He is Joe Mullinax of Grizzly Bear Blues. When we come back, the University of Memphis goes to Cincinnati tomorrow. One of the biggest games that the University of Memphis has played in quite some time. We'll discuss that and more with Tiger Basketball when John Martin joins the program. We come back right here on the Eric Kastein Show, 92.9 FM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.